Hey listeners, if you love The Santhro Life and you want to support the show, Anchor.fm makes it super easy to do. They give you options to donate $1, $5, or $10 on a monthly basis. Whatever you choose to support us with, we're grateful to have you, and it's going to help us produce better and better content.
And now, on to the show.
Hello and welcome to the third episode of the This Anthro Life Savage Minds Collaboration. As always, I'm Ryan Collins.
And I'm Adam Gamwell. Today we're sitting down with Sapiens. It's a new online publication brought to us by the Winogrand Foundation for Anthropological Research. Now, Sapiens is a new, about a year old online publication group that poises itself kind of like the work of Scientific American, Discover Magazine, Slate Political, and other science-based journalism and political websites and content aggregators.
Speaking with Sapiens was a fun move for us in continuing on our series with different types of conversations that are ongoing in anthropology right now, because Sapiens is reaching with a group of educated laypersons who are not necessarily within the academy, as this is really a different type of conversation altogether. And speaking with us today is Sapiens digital editor Daniel Salas. Daniel received his BA in anthropology from New York University and an MA in anthropology from the New School for Social Research. He joined the Winogrand Foundation in 2011, where he currently holds the title of communications coordinator. Daniel has also played a key role in conceptualizing Sapiens from his foundation, and so he's going to tell us a little bit more about that today.
One of our first questions to kick this off is, what is Sapiens? You know, so a lot of the things, a lot of our listeners may or may not know what that is. You know, it's a fairly new online publication venue, but we want to kind of hear it from your mouth. And part of our thinking of talking with Sapiens is that this is a nice differentiator between Savage Minds, which is sort of this open blog. And Sapiens is quite of a newer baby, so
and
tell us a bit about that.
You know, our last episode, too, was with the American Anthropological Association, so it's a much different sort of grouping, a much more different collection of voices than what we're going to get at Sapiens or Savage Minds.
Yeah, totally.
Sure. Well, so Sapiens is a project of the Winogrand Foundation for Anthropological Research. We started developing this about 2 years ago. We've been live for a year, and really the short and sweet answer is that it's a online content producer, sometimes we call it a web portal news site, dedicated to producing anthropology material for a popular audience who might not be exposed to anthropology otherwise. Okay. You know, we like to think that we're sort of in the same sphere or aspiring to the sphere of like sites like Nautilus or Hakai or Eon. And really just producing interesting, webby kinds of stories that bring anthropology to an audience that might not be exposed to it. And both, producing material from journalists, professional science journalists, but also we're really invested in collaborating with actual anthropologists, professional anthropologists, and helping cultivate their voices and really just... helping support the field by growing public anthropology's footprints on the web.
Awesome. So, you know, speaking a little bit more to audience and your targeted audience, when we were talking with Leslie Walker and Ed Liebau last week, we talked a little bit about how audience can be engaged in different types of capacities. But one of the things that struck us was their understanding of anthropology, and I think that Adam and I agree, is that most of us aren't even exposed to anthropology until we go to a university type of setting.
Sure.
So I was wondering if this is something that you guys at Sapiens encounter when you're trying to reach a target audience that may not have been exposed to anthropology.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, we like to talk about our audience as, or our target audience rather, as, you know, the educated layperson, you know, someone who, you know, has an idea, has an inkling of what anthropology is, you know, the study of humankind in some way. You know, probably has an interest in science, popular science or science journalism, but maybe doesn't really know exactly what an anthropologist does or, you know, what specifically are anthropologists today working on. And so I think that's really the end that we're trying to strike at, is people who, you know, consume the kind, this kind of media online, you know, long reads about evolution or... you know, archaeology, ancient civilizations, or, you know, even just you know, in-depth, you know, pieces about, say, urban life in Bangkok or something, you know, the kinds of material that you'd see, you know, in publications like the New York Times or, you know, any other sorts of mainstream publications. But we're trying to, you know, we're all anthropology all the time. But that's really, I think, who we're going for is people who have sort of maybe an adjacent interest in anthropology, but don't really know much about it.
So what would you say, I mean, in your personal view, because you work as the digital editor at Sapiens, and so how does Sapiens see itself as fitting into the broader world of anthropology? Is it about being a public-facing institution that helps anthropologists bring their research out? Is it about, you know, pulling in a new way of writing, maybe kind of as popular science? How does Sapiens sort of build on what anthropology is?
Sure. So what I would say is that we are, like I said before, trying to collaborate with anthropologists to produce what editor-in-chief Chip Caldwell refers to as a new genre, sort of combining, you know, the key insights of anthropology with the tools of journalism and to create, you know, what we see as being exceptionally compelling pop anthropology, basically. Mm. And, you know, that can mean, like I said, working with science journalists who will be, you know, researching and doing like journalism about anthropology, or it can be working with graduate students and professors, professional anthropologists, to you know, create a narrative, a story about their research that you know, a popular audience can enjoy and take something from.
Cool. I like the idea that this is a new genre, right? Because it's kind of exciting. It's got a lot of...
Yeah, it's a compelling idea, I think.
Right, you know, interesting cachet to it, right? So, you know, following up on that, though, you know, Sapiens, as you mentioned, it's pretty young, right? You guys have only been around for 2 years. So this idea of the new genre and the sort of the goals that you have now, were those goals there from the beginning, or have they adapted and changed a little bit as you've grown?
Those goals were there from the beginning, but I would say developing them and learning how to best do it has been a work in progress that we're still, you know, in the middle of. I think that when we first started, you know, we had, you know, our editorial staff is, you know, except for Chip, our editor-in-chief, and myself, entirely from a journalism background.
Okay.
So, you know, they were science journalists. They had worked with scientists. They knew about, you know, how to talk about research, but they weren't necessarily used to working with professional anthropologists who would write for, you know, the academy. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, it was just a big shot in the dark to see how we would work with them to produce the material that we would be proud of putting out on the site and that we felt would be compelling for a popular audience. Mm-hmm. So I think we've gotten better at it. I'm not involved in editing on a day-to-day basis. I'm the digital editor, but you know, I do think that we're getting better at it, and we're learning how to just work better with people who might not be used to writing for the public.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely think that your outreach is pretty strong. I mean, if you look at your Facebook likes and you look at your Twitter feed, I mean, just in 1 year, you guys have done a lot of great work to get yourselves out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does seem like it's going pretty well. I think one of the big challenges right now is just from my perspective is getting those other brands, you know, the more science journalism brands to be more aware of us, because, you know, we have a Creative Commons license where we reprint stories all the time from places like The Conversation and Hakai. And, you know, it'll be like one of our big, you know, sort of our big goals is to, you know, have someone reprint some of our stuff. And we have, you know, we have had republication agreements with The Atlantic, Scientific American, but, you know, this Creative Commons license, you know, a lot of our material is now Creative Commons and people can share it. And that would be, you know, a great sign to us that we're doing something right.
Right on. I mean, that's really cool too, because I mean, this makes me think too, because part of our you know, inspiration in doing this crossover series too is to think about ways that anthropology and the ways of producing anthropology, writing about it, you know, publishing it, are expanding in 2017. I mean, they've been doing it for a while, but you know, Sapiens seems like a really interesting example, or say it is an interesting example, that this is taking place in terms of that. It sounds like, you know, like the overall mission and the positioning that Sapiens is taking is premised upon really going at science journalism. It's going at other, you know, we can say, you know, great or respected journals like The Atlantic, and other sort of, you know, kind of millennial upstarts like Eon and stuff, and that are doing in the conversation also, right? That they're all good sites, you know, but they are about producing this sort of influx of content that is intellectual, that is based on scientific reasoning. It is based on, you know, offering sort of in-depth conversations and dialogues. And so that seems nice. I mean, anthropology, in my view, I'd say probably in all of ours, that it's really well poised for these kinds of conversations, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think anthropology, just, you know, at its core, you know, it's about, you know, old cliche, you know, finding the strange and the familiar and the familiar and the strange. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like there are, you know, a whole universe of little nuggets that, you know, can change your perspective on the world and, you know, bring you out of your provincial understanding or, you know, conceptions about, you know, what people are like, what culture is like, you know, why people believe the things they believe. Mm-hmm. And so I think some of our most successful pieces really, you know, hinge on taking, you know, either reversing something that might be a common conception, like, for instance, you know, anumeric societies, our numbers, you know, is counting a universal phenomenon. Mm. You know, is time something that exists the same in every culture? And really just sort of complicating that for the audience. And, you know, that's, you know, just thinking back, like, these are the kind of things that brought me into anthropology as an undergrad.
Right.
You know, just, you know, an interest in the world outside of what I knew and trying to understand it and trying to bridge the gap. And so I think that, yeah, anthropology just seems, you know, it's the kind of thing that everyone really has an interest in. You know, it's about people. I think everyone's interested in that, but they might not have a word for it or might not know where to get it. I think that we're trying to help out with that.
Hmm. In some ways, it really kind of sounds like you're doing for anthropology what StarTalk is doing for astrophysics in some capacity, or at least going for that. You know, by opening up these different understandings of the world or the worlds out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that definitely, you know, that's what we would hope that, you know, that the person or audience would, you know, see us as a, you know, way not only into anthropology as a discipline, but also into just sort of, you know, seeing the world in a different way. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I think that, you know, again, it's still a work in progress. We're still learning how to do it. We're still growing. But I think that we are getting better at understanding just how, you know, how to work anthropology with the, work it into the kinds of stories we're telling in a journalistic mode.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you find, like, one of the things that makes me think of too in terms of is the kind of content that you would produce? And so we can talk about evergreen stories that are just, they can come out at any point. And like the anumeric societies is an example of that, right? That you could look at both across historical and contemporary examples and say, oh, we're looking at how numbers may or may not function. So that's what we call evergreen, that it would be, you could publish it today and in a year and it would still be useful, versus we're reporting today on an attack in Syria. Do you try to measure those in Sapiens and try to have a mixture of each, or is it more about kind of evergreen content, more about news production, or do you steer away from either one of those?
We definitely do both. I would say just because of the nature of, I mean, we work almost entirely off of pitches and proposals. Mm-hmm. So, you know, someone, a journalist or an anthropologist will come to us and say, hey, I got this idea for a story. We will, you know, either read their proposal or, you know, shoot them back a modified pitch, and we'll work with them really closely to build the kind of stories that we publish. Yeah. And so I would say that the you know, most especially from anthropologists who are writing about their research, that's basically evergreen kinds of things, but we definitely do really work hard to produce content that responds to current events as well.
Right.
Actually, we've got a piece coming out next week in which our editor-in-chief thought that the subject could use an anthropologist's eye and their take on it. So they basically did some snooping around and found someone, asked them, hey, can you write us a piece about this topic? And we took it from there. So I would say, it's a bit of both, but I think just from a content producer perspective, I think the evergreen stuff is really the backbone of the site. Mm-hmm. And, it's stuff that people can find, a year from now. We can reintroduce it into our, promotions, given different events happening in the world. And so, and also in a way, that really is the core of anthropologists talking about their work and bringing their anthropology to the public.
Hey, we hope you have been enjoying what you've been listening to so far. We just wanted to have a quick break in the middle to talk about our companion blog piece that's going to be on Savage Minds. This is going to be a piece that's really focused on the idea of genre bending with anthropology, working between fact, fiction, and so much more, and how anthropology can take on these different types of discourses and dialogues.
Yeah, so if you've been checking out the series so far, we do have a companion blog piece for every single episode so far, and we'll have two more coming out as well. These have been a really fun chance for Ryan and I to explore in writing. We normally make TAL through audio, so this has been a fun other way to explore some ideas, keep the conversation going with you all, and have a little more chance to bring in some ideas that we didn't really think of until after we recorded the episode. The other piece we want to drop in there is if you love TAL, please consider giving us a donation or supporting us, underwriting us, whatever you want to call it. We're a totally self-funded podcast, as you may or may not know, and so everything we do comes out of our own pockets. So we have a little PayPal donation button you can give securely on our site. We have it now on every episode. We're really making this big push because Ryan and I love making TAL, and we want to make this full-time for you if we can, and keep producing awesome anthropological content that also, like we write about, bends genres. So without further ado, back to the episode.
I mean, I definitely see that the dualism that you're talking about on your website. I mean, looking at the front page right now, you have a story of how and why hazing evolved by Christopher Kavanaugh. And you can think about that as in some way being evergreen, but also really responding to a lot of things going on in the public media right now. And then you also have Uncovering Ancient Clues to Humanity's First Fires by Amber Dance. And that seems like a very much more evergreen type of story. That's not going to go away anytime soon. People are going to be able to look at that in the future and be like, oh, that's a cool insight. That's something maybe I can look at for the origins of humans or change my understanding of how we all came to
right.
be.
Right. Yeah. It's a pretty core idea, fire. I mean, how did that start? I think it's something that everyone can, the pitch is very simple. And I think it's, we're really proud of that piece. It came out really well. That was done by a science journalist.
Oh, very cool.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that makes me think. I mean, so one of the ideas that inspired Ryan and I actually to even think about doing this this crossover is last year, and we were at the American Anthropological Association annual meeting, and the Wenner Grand actually had their 75th anniversary panel, and Alex Golub, who's one of the writers of Savage Minds, who was on the first episode of this crossover, was talking about his take on anthro and speaking to different audiences. And one of the things that he said when a audience member asked about essentially this question of like, does evergreen make more sense versus how do you respond? And like the challenge obviously is like, being an anthropologist, trying to add a lens to current events would be a full-time job by itself. He jokingly says, which we say, we agree with. Uh-huh. But in that idea, like one of the things that anthropology can do, and even what you said too, Dan, is that part of this is about going back to the basics of what drew us to anthropology in the first place. Right. And the way Alex said this, which I really liked was again about putting context before events themselves. And so the question of fire as well as hazing too, right? If an event is talking about fraternity hazing or, I want to have my 4th of July barbecue here in the U.S., then I would like to be able to understand also where fire came from, why hazing has been part of U.S. culture for a while. Anyway, right?
Right.
Right. There are these two different I don't want to say poles, but two different sort of realms of interest. You have the things that can speak to the, the events going on in your own life or the things you might know about versus the things that are completely outside your day-to-day experience, the distant past or, people on the other side of the world. So it's these two kinds of, you know, it's again, the strange and making the strange familiar and then making the familiar strange.
Yeah.
So in terms of growth, because I want to ask a little bit about this too, after a year of having Sapiens out there, what type of things do you want to see Sapiens grow into and in, say, the next year?
Sure. I think we want to expand our types of contents a little bit. I mean, that's what I would think, you know, if you had a wish list, I would say we want to produce more multimedia contents, videos, maybe podcasts. We're kind of playing with that idea, nothing really concrete.